Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
So David Liebert, there you go. That was a DJ's choice on that one, and I played in love a bad it, way. That's it. A cool tune, man.
That was one of the few songs that Bobby Miranda didn't sing lead on. That was sung by Tommy Giuliano, and turns out that's one of my all-time favorite happening songs. I really like that one.
Super edgy.
It was sort of what I wanted, the direction in which I wanted to go with the happenings, but didn't work out that way.
Yeah, it's almost got kind of a Mama Told Me Not to Come kind of a thing going on.
Night-ish.
Right? I mean, it has this very spooky, eerie kind of almost.
Yeah, it's that was one of my favorite songs. It's exactly what I wanted to do, to apply our harmony techniques, which I felt we did really well, probably the best thing that we did, to more contemporary themes and structures. And that did get through. It was actually, I believe, on the B-side of I Got Rhythm, which was a huge hit for us.
Yeah, I Got Rhythm was a gigantic song. Your version of it obviously was everywhere, and it was for a lot of people like my dad. He loved that song, and I think for the rest of us, we're like, "Wow, Dad, how can you listen to that stuff?" But then you also went then after you left the happenings, you had an offer to fly back and forth between New York and Detroit and become the tour manager, the road manager for Rare Earth.
Rare Earth.
Which, as far as I'm concerned, one of the most underrated, one of the greatest bands of all time.
They were a great band. They played mostly weekends, so I was able to sort of advance the dates from my apartment in New York. And then the night before, I'd fly out to Detroit, and then we'd all fly out and do the gigs that weekend. And then when the weekend was over, I'd put them back on a plane back to Detroit, and I'd fly myself back to New York. And this went on for several very pleasant months. It was just a great job, a nice, cushy job, and they were great guys. They put on a fabulous show. They were really good. And then one day, I got a call from Johnny Padel, who was and still is Alice Cooper's booking agent. And he said that the Alice Cooper band was looking for a new tour manager. Would I be interested? Well, I was interested, and I did get hired. And the first gig was in Atlanta, Georgia. And Alice's manager, Shep Gordon, said, well, just pay attention. Just try and observe what's going on, David. You'll get the hang of it. Listen, there was no tech manual. There was no job description. And my first impression of all of this was 30-some-odd guys crawling all over all the gear and equipment like giant insects. And I said, I thought I had made the biggest mistake of my life leaving my rare earth job for this insanity. But as it turned out, of course, it wasn't the biggest mistake of my life. It was one of the best decisions of my life, because for the next 4 years, being Alice's tour manager, not only was it a great job where I traveled all over the world and we had our own private plane for every tour we did, I also had the greatest rock and roll mentor anyone could have in the person of Shep Gordon.
Yeah, Supermensch. Supermensch,
the legendary Shep Gordon. I would say that 99% of what I learned about the music business, I learned from Shep Gordon.
One of his best friends, one of Alice's best friends, is a guy that my wife worked with for a long time, a guy named Mark Tarbell, who's a chef in Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
And so he goes out to Hawaii to cook for Shep every so once in a while and does events with them. And he and Alice hang out at his restaurant. And right. So I've heard some great stories about Shep and that he is the real deal. And there's a documentary that came out about 10 years ago called Supermensch, The Legend of Shep Gordon. If anybody wants to watch, I don't know who has it now, Netflix or Amazon Prime or whatever, but you should watch it. But, you know, that's an interesting juxtaposition, though, because there was all this disorganization, as you reference, especially when you're talking about it in the book, a little bit of Alice Cooper, which was just getting, as an act, was just kind of getting things together, versus rare earth. And I think when I was reading that, and you don't spend a lot of time talking about rare earth, but I was, I've always think of any of those Motown acts as being so highly influenced by the factory floor of the big three automakers, and that there was a kind of work-a-day, lunch bucket approach, and not a lot of fooling around, whether it's Motown or the Motown subsidiary, Rare Earth Records, producing Rare Earth, that there was just this, people got down to business, they knew their jobs, they did their jobs, and then they went home. And that was, that's, and they did it with precision and a level of quality that I think is a high watermark in the recordings of Rare Earth. Where are you on that?
Yeah, they made fabulous records. They really were really enduring records. And they were serious about what they did. They took a lot of pride, and I was very proud to be part of their entourage. They're a great bunch of guys, and they didn't have a lot of airs about them. And
no,
their purpose
I mean.
Was to put on the best show they possibly could, and they did.
And they did, and they were the, in a lot of ways, they were the first major jam band that would get up and do 15, 20-minute versions of their radio hits.
Yeah.
And they did them in such a way that was, that really brought something to it, as opposed to that typical, you know, the drummer gets his 6-minute drum solo up there and everybody else goes and has a drink backstage. You know, it, they, everything about Rare Earth to me was about the work ethic of the band, and that they gave the a show that I wish I could have seen in that era, where they really they gave the audience its money's worth.
Well, you know, you mentioned that they were sort of like a jam band, and they were, because when they did these extended versions of their hit songs, they created a groove. They got into the zone. And once they were in that zone, man, there was nothing like it. They you know, they could really get into it, and you could see the reaction from the audience. It was really something to see. It was great.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But and Alice Cooper obviously was like that too, but in a different way. The juxtapositions of Alice Cooper, you know, here he was this guy who, you know, wore scary makeup, but he played, you know, golf with Groucho Marx. You know, he was a guy who had, his persona was Alice on stage, but he was still Vincent Fournier in every other case. He was, you know, he did, you know, creepy things on stage, but he was wearing a tuxedo while he did it. I mean, there was just like all of these really interesting contradictions about Alice Cooper. And as the tours went on, and this is, I'd love to have you comment on this, and they got more theatrical, and the songs got more intricate. I think, again, we're talking of people who really knew how to put on a show as opposed to just giving an audience a chance to come and worship them.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, Alice was, the whole band, the Alice Cooper band, this was very unique. It was almost like a morality play, you know. Evil Alice Cooper came out and It was all tongue-in-cheek, though. I don't think anybody, you know, took it very seriously. And that certainly wasn't what Alice was like off stage. He was a very unassuming guy. He just wanted to hang out and be one of the guys. And, you know, not much of a prima donna at all. He really didn't take himself seriously. He took what he did seriously. That's how he earned his living, and that's how he made his money. But that was just a personality on stage. It wasn't anything like him. Yeah, he would, like you said, he played golf with Groucho Marx. He would go on Hollywood Squares. You know, he was right. sort of a straight-laced kind of guy, really.
But he kind of got the joke. He got his own joke as opposed to buying into his own publicity. And that, I think we've all been around plenty of people in show business who choose, you know, buying into their own publicity to getting, right. you know, to being reminded of just how lucky they are to be there in the first place.
Yeah, he never really took himself seriously in that regard. I think he was grateful that he became a star, and, you know, he certainly knew how to milk that. But, no, that's not who he was, and it's not who he wanted to be when he stepped off that stage.
What was the hardest thing about taking an Alice Cooper show? And you joined them just before the Billion Dollar Babies tour?
No, a little bit earlier than that.
Okay.
I joined them during the Killer Tour.
Killer Tour. Love that album.
And then what came after that? The School's Out.
Right.
You know, I was his tour manager for his most formidable years. It was Killer, School's Out, Billion Dollar Babies, Muscle of Love.
Welcome to My Nightmare. Yeah, I love that song.
And
that was interesting because, then I'll go back to what I was saying, is that the escalation of the onstage theatrics at a time when more and more people were paying attention to him, and there was plenty of finger wagging and tisking about, you know, all of the perceived evil that he represented and all that other stuff, which was total nonsense. It was no more true than an actor playing Dracula, right?
Right. So
he was Bela Lugosi who could rock pretty much. And yet, you know, but people made him the poster child for all that was going wrong with the culture. And which is silly because he liked to drink beer, he liked to go out and play country club sports, and he was a kind of an upwardly seemingly in a kind of a family man, you know, that at least at some point that's how he fell into it. And now I understand he's a born again Christian still.
Well, yeah, his, you know, his father was a pastor, and he all of the bad publicity and all the terrible things that people were saying, well, we kind of liked that because it sort of, you know, built the mystique of Alice Cooper. If there was no bad publicity, he never would have become the big star. So we didn't shy away from it. We sort of made fun of it in a way. It was all part of the publicity vehicle. We weren't angry about it. We were happy about it.
Yeah, that would be the vibe of that early. It's not a video. It's an early song film like the Beatles were doing, where he did a little mini movie around the song Elected. And if you didn't get the joke, if you weren't catching on by then, it's going to be pretty hopeless for you, because that was, you know, this was a guy who was making fun of American mainstream culture, but not, he wasn't being unpatriotic while he was doing it. He was doing what any stand-up comic would do.
Exactly. And, you know, it wasn't, what he did was not to really be taken seriously. It was a form of entertainment, Alice has a great sense of humor. He sees his joke in almost everything. It was wonderful being around the guy and the band, all the people that worked for him. We had a great time. We did a lot of laughing. There was a lot of pranks and a lot of camaraderie and a lot of love. You know, we everybody was grateful to be part of it all. And we were, you know, we were having a pretty good time, Ian, let me tell you.
After you whipped that road crew into shape.
Yeah.
I mean, that couldn't have been, I mean, here you're the new guy and, you know, the, I think it's fair to say the reputation anyway from front of the house is that that was a pretty well-oiled machine with all of the props and all of the different, you know, staged antics that Alice Cooper was doing. Everybody had to know exactly what their job was.
Absolutely. And even though in the beginning they seemed to be just a bunch of giant insects crawling over everything, they knew exactly what they were doing. Everyone took a lot of pride in their job, and they were real professional, and they did it as best they could. And everybody relied on everybody else. You know, if something didn't work, Alice could end up looking like an idiot on stage. No one ever wanted that to happen.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo! Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five!
High Five!
Casino!
Casino!
Win at HighFiveCasino.com!
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino!
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.